Okay, here we go. Here's the pasuk. Hisham Mordechai Shmor Nafshcha Maod Pen Tishkach. Don't forget. As I bring my Shiroi Nechul Pen Yisum Milvavcha Chayim Mechayecha. Veodat Mo Benechul Benei Benecha Yom Asher Madav Ner Hashem Ukecha Bukhari Veomer Hashem Emor Hashem Elai Hakel Li Esam, etc. It's usher to forget Matan Torah. There's a mitzvah to remember. That's what he says. To remember Matan Torah. Now I'm reading. There's a difference of opinion among the Rishonim regarding the inclusion of this exhortation in the formal counting of the Tariq mitzvahs. In other words, not everything the Torah tells you to do is part of the Tariq mitzvahs. Is this one of the official 613? So the Ramban counts it, and the Rambam doesn't. The Ramban sees special importance in remembering that Hashem gave us the Torah himself, rather than through Moshe, etc. That it was directly from Hashem. Remember that Hashem revealed himself to us and gave us the Torah. We will know that any prophet who claims otherwise is not to be believed. The Ramban further explains that this is the reason the revelation was accompanied by so many fearsome spectacles. Thunder, lightning, earshot. Hashem wanted the experience of Sinai to be etched in the memories of the Jewish people so deeply that it would be carried forward to all future generations. This is the famous Ramban. The Rambam disagrees with the Ramban and does not consider this as one of the Tariq mitzvos. He sees this commandment as a repetition and extension of the 11th mitzvah, which is to learn Torah and keep the mitzvahs. Nonetheless, obviously, the Rambam agrees with the critical centrality of remembering the revelation of Sinai. He just doesn't consider it one of the Tariq mitzvos. In other words, of course you have to remember the Torah says remember Har Sinai. The Ramban counts it as part of the 6th. Now watch this. You don't know, the Torah writes that when a person makes the blessing over the Torah, he should have in mind the revelation of Sinai. It's amazing. When you say Birchos HaTorah, the Torah says, think about Maimed Har Sinai. He also writes that when you remember Maimed Har Sinai, we should visualize the image of the fire that reached up into the heavens and all the other spectacular manifestations. Oh. So now, what we're going to do now is spend a few minutes reading Rabbi Deutsch's description of Maimon Har Sinai. This is what you're supposed to think about. Matan Torah happened on Shavuos. This is what you're supposed to think about. This is the mitzvah. This is the mitzvah. Do you remember Maimon Har Sinai? This is the mitzvah. So let's spend a few minutes talking about, this is a whole, you should get this book. If, when you learn Shavuos night, you should learn, you know, regular Gemara, whatever else you learn, but if you need a break, and you want to, learn something lighter for part of the day, part of the night, pick up this book and read a Matan Torah. Here we go. You're lucky you didn't pick it up. It was the day on which the covenantal, next page, page 191. The Jewish people would become Hashem's ace for all eternity. Yeah? It's the back there. 26 generations had come and gone since the creation of the world before the Torah entered at center stage. The existence of the world without Torah had been tenuous for all this time, surviving solely by the mercy of Hashem, who waited patiently until the age of Torah would arrive. And now, at long last, the Jewish people stood at the foot of Mount Sinai, a free and complete nation, ready and eager to receive the Torah and bring it into the world. The Jewish people were like a beautiful rose, and the pagan nations were like evil thorns. Hashem preserved his, this is all based on Midrashim, his garden for the sake of the rose among the thorns. Next paragraph. The day on which Torah was to be, next paragraph, same page, was Vav Sivan, Shabbos, which is what Hashem wanted. Hashem had blessed, sanctified the Shabbos, the seventh day of creation. Now that he was going to imbue another day with the transcendent spiritual blessing of giving of the Torah, he deemed no other day as worthy of this blessing as Shabbos. So it fits that the Kedusha of Shabbos becomes the day we get the Kedusha of the Torah. However, the world had been incomplete for thousands of years. It's a deep idea. Therefore, it was appropriate that Shabbos, the day that brought the creation of the world in physical completion, should be the spiritual completion as well. That's a beautiful pshat. That's a beautiful idea. Hashem finished the creation of the world on Shabbos. So it makes sense when you bring the Torah into the world, it also should be on Shabbos as well. Now, the Jewish capital was abuzz with almost unbearable excitement that Friday night. Everyone went to sleep. Earlier in the week, Moshe had urged them to stay up the whole night, this night, with eager anticipation. They prepared to receive the Torah. But the people deemed it better to go to sleep and be fully rested, instead of risking fatigue and drowsiness during the great event. That's why they slept. They slept soundly and peacefully through the night, and undisturbed by meddlesome insects. The short spring nights slipped away, and the sun's first rays crept over the horizon and heated up the desert. So the Jewish people slept. The desert was silent. Day was about to break. Jewish people had overslept and would not be ready to receive the Torah at the designated time. That's one of the reasons that we're supposed to stay up the whole night, is to make up for that. A paragraph later. The prelude to the giving of the Torah began with a spectacular display of meteorological disturbances. The desert was calm, only a dry breeze. Then a diaphanous mist rose among the mountaintops. Soon it was surrounded by immense cloud banks. The congregation over Har Sinai, as if all the heavens had come together to form a single thick blanket. A stiff wind whipped through the Jewish encampment. A light rain began to fall, taking the edge off the desert heat and washing the mountainside of debris until they gleamed spotless, meaning it was perfect. Matan Torah happened. This is the ultimate perfection of the world. The winds gathered force, coming in from every direction. A miraculous phenomenon that was only a harbinger of greater miracles to come. Next page. Suddenly a brilliant flash of lightning cracked with ear-splitting, heart-pounding shower flames and sparks, rent the morning sky. This is what we're supposed to think about on Shavuos. This is what our forefathers saw, and they've passed down to every generation. And this, there are many, what we're going to read now, the main difference between our religion and the true religion, and Lahavdil, the not true ones. Our religion started with this spectacle that several million people saw and testified about from father to son. Yeah, not just one person, a different one. The image of the lightning bolt was followed immediately by a mighty crash of thunder that rattled the encampment, reversed of the earth. No one in the desert watching this spectacular display had ever seen sights and sounds such as these. But the sounding of the shofar, which had once been on the left corner of the ram of the Akedah, the blast of the shofar on a gargantuan scale that struck fear into all hearts, followed along the staccato pattern of Tkiyas Shvarim Truah. The people realized these blasts of the shofar were otherworldly spiritual sound. They recognized as a rallying cry, a call for preparation, and they trembled with awe and fear. Sounds and bombarded, I'm skipping a little, images bombarded the people from every direction. The crackle and the flash of lightning and the booming crash of thunder were more intense than ever experienced before. The Jewish people were all deeply moved, impressed, and inspired, each according to the level of spiritual achievement. Now, amid all these astounding manifestations of sight and sound, a huge pillar of flame, a symbol of the Shekhinah and the Torah, erupted from the base of the mountain and pierced the very heavens. The flames were fiercer than the fire of a furnace. Their intense spiritual light obliterated all signs of day and night that cannot be with the naked human eye. Guys, Hashem is kol kulo ruchnius, and we're gashmius. So the moment when Hashem revealed himself to the world was like the ultimate time of like the physical world somehow having real ruchnius in it. So that's why all these things happen. This is somehow, you know, like we're having a physical manifestation of the real ruchnius in the world. And that's why all these things are happening. The fire emanated from the mountaintop in seven concentric circles. Interesting. Rising in intensity, those look like the seven heavens. On the mountainside, the fires dried any wetness left by the rainfall and completely incinerated the stones and rubble, and the rain did not wash away. The mountain shook and trembled as fire roasted its flanks. A mysterious purple vapor with a fragrant scent that rose from the mountaintop, etc. It was a miraculous vapor. The anonymity of the RFL clouds now spread across the heavens so that the brilliant day was plunged in deep shadow. It was as if a curtain had intended to filter and obscure the image of the revelation of the Shekhinah as the retinue of heavenly angels drew closer. I mean, there's a lot here. Next page, 197, the middle. The heavens and earth came toward each other and embraced, and in this embrace the Shekhinah made its abode. It was as if the heavens were lamenting the transfer of the Torah from its spiritual realm to the physical realm of the earth, and as if the earth was sighing with pleasure as it gathered the divine gift into its possession. The seven heavens parted, revealed the glory of the Shekhinah in all its majestic beauty. We had a vision of Hashem. We had this vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu watching the seven heavens part, and Hashem gave us the Torah. The Jewish people watched with the bulging eyes of 22,000 chariots of angels clothed in fire, accompanied on one side of the Shekhinah in, next page 198. in their hands they held the crowns for the Levim to be placed on the heads during the giving of the Torah, etc. Now, there's the famous Medrash. Page 199. The same page, the other side. Gradually, the vast terrain around Mount Sinai, the mountains and the desert, realized that the war was not coming to an end. They stabilized and they began to compare themselves, so to speak, with Har Sinai. The other mountains complained. This is the Medrash. It says that during Maimon Har Sinai, the mountains were dancing. They were complaining, "Hashem, Hashem, we want the Torah." What a relief, said the mountains. The whole thing was a false alarm. There wasn't coming to an end. Hashem is giving the Torah to the Jewish people. But why on Har Sinai of all places? My question exactly, said another mountain. Har Sinai is such a small, humble, insignificant mountain. Why does it deserve such an honor? I don't think it's fair that the pipsqueak of a mountain gets the honor. I'm not sure they use the word pipsqueak, but alright. That's his license. I agree, said Mount Har Tavor. Look at me. I'm the tallest. Too tall to be submerged even by the waters of the great flood. I can get the honor. I think the honor, another mountain said. I'm the most beautiful. Not so fast, Har Carmel said. I'm the strongest, etc., etc. Famous song. I am the other mountain said, I am a mountain so very wide. Right. And I'm up to the sky. The Torah shall be given on me, for I am as wide as can be, you see. And then the other ones go on. And then the little one, I am a but little Har Sinai just stood there and sighed. I am not tall and I am not wide. The Torah shall be given on me, for I is as humble as something as can be, you see. Something like that. It's a nice song. All my kids learned it in Ghan. What? Oh, this is from my kids Ghan. Could be it's an Uncle Moshe too. Anyway, the Torah was given on a humble mountain. The message is, you have to be humble. A, you have to be humble in front of Hashem. That's the main thing. You have to be humble in front of Hashem. Because whatever we are, we're nothing in front of Hashem. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two, if you want to learn Torah to be successful, you have to be humble. Want to learn. People that are Bali Gaiva, they're not ready to absorb everything. They make mistakes. They don't ask. And there's a deep idea, very deep idea. The more you learn, the more you know, the more you're closer to Hashem, you should have more humility. Because it's like the sun. If you're far from the sun, you can glance at the sun for half a second. As you get closer to the sun, you can't look at it. It's too strong. So ironically, a person who learns more and grows more Yiras Shamayim, and is closer to Hashem, he appreciates what it means to be closer to Hashem. He has more humility. Rav Shechter always talks about that. It's in his Havdama to us. It's a deep idea. That's why the Torah was given on Har Sinai. Good. Then the thunder starts. 1 second. Then he describes on page 204, 205, a few pages later. Then he describes Kaf Aleim Har Yehidis, right? Yes? What does that mean? Hashem picked up the mountain and said, accept it or else.
Doesn't he mean like pail?
A barrel.
What? A barrel. Yehidis is a barrel. Like a barrel. There are different shots in why that was the mashal. That's 204, 205. Hashem picked it up. He said, accept it or else. This is a famous idea that even though we said Nasiv and Ishma, Hashem forced it upon us. There was a combination. That's a famous discussion, why the combination. So the deep answer is the Maharal's answer, which you have to remember, which is, we did say Nasev and Ishma. But a Jew has to know, it's not voluntary. You have to feel fully, I'm commanded by Hashem. So even though they didn't need to be forced, but Hashem wanted to show them the essence of Avodat Hashem is, you're an Eved, do what I say. That's why he forced it upon us, even though we didn't need it like that. That's the Maharal's answer. There are other answers as well. Some say that we accepted Torah Shebichtav. And Torah Shebichtav was too hard. That Hashem had to force upon us. He talks about Hashem gave Moshe warnings right before Matan Torah that Bnei Israel shouldn't come too close. Okay, let's go to the next section. I want to read some more. Here we go. Rav Nevatapol tells us in Zohar. They said that's I have it in my book. That when they said Nasev and Ishma, they had achieved the level of other complaints. And there's, I have a whole shot. Rav Nelson's whole shot. I'll show you later. It's in my book. I quote Rav Nelson word for word. It's a beautiful shot, what the connection is. The entire world, guys, this is a mitzvah that we are always supposed to remember this, and especially on Shavuos, as you're experiencing Shavuos, remember this. Maimon Har Sinai. and think about it and talk about it with your friends and then with your kids. B'zat Hashem. This is what I do on Shavuos. My kids and I, we read this at the table. That's what we do. We should read. This is it. This is an amazing book. The entire world trembled and quaked. Its very material existence on the verge of being dissolved as the Shekhinah descended upon it. The earth shook to its very core, that the reservoirs in the bowels of the earth nearly ruptured and flooded the entire world. Trees shattered and fell, forests were devastated, in the spiritual realm there were upheavals as well. The dead, oh, I'm not sure what this means. The angels, the dead, okay, next page. Next page. The world continued to shake and quake, Hashem's voice rang out. This is a medrash, not everyone knows this. This is interesting. Just before Hashem spoke the Ten Commandments, the Jewish people always had a Kriya Shema. Do you know that? Yeah. He quotes that there from Shema Yisrael, Hashem Okeinu, Hashem Echad, Baruch Shem, Kvod Mechus Elohim Voad. He quotes there from the Medrash. Doesn't say. Probably out loud. Then Hashem said, Anochi Hashem, I am Lord your God. Hashem spoke in the startling voice that people had when he spoke to Moshe earlier. And they instantly recognized it as belonging to the Shekhinah. In fact, the entire world heard the voice emanating from Sinai. The clamor of the environment stopped. The world stopped and listened, as if with bated breath, to the Shekhinah speaking. The seismic tremors and the atmospheric disturbances subsided. The sun stopped in its path. The water ceased to flow. The birds ceased their chirping. The cows did not low. In the realm of the heaven, the ministering angels fell silent. The entire world informed through prophecy that the Shekhinah was speaking fell utterly silent. No creature or entity dared emit a sound, lest it be thought there was another God, and it was speaking at the same time with the Shekhinah. Oh, that's what happened at Mayamid Har Sinai. Before then, upheaval, as Ruchnias and Gashmias were meeting, then when Hashem actually spoke, the voice carried the whole world, and nothing else was happening. The message is that at the highest levels, the only thing which really exists in the world is Hashem and Ruchnias, and our job is to connect with Hashem through whatever Gashmias we have here. Now, then he quotes the Medrash that Hashem had told us all of the Dibros like in one word at one time, but we didn't understand, like Zachar v'Shamor were said at the same time, and then Hashem began repeating the Aseret Dibros by one. The bottom of page 215. As it would turn out, Hashem spoke only the first two commandments directly to the people. The rest of the commandments were transmitted to the Jews through Moshe. There's the famous hint. What's the famous hint? Taryag 6:13. Torah Tzivolana Moshe. Torah 6:11. Meaning the first two Hashem told us. But the 6:11, next page. Kamakot. Oh. There we go. Talks about Shabbos. Zachor v'Shamor were said literally at the same time. Now guys, guys, go to page 217, the next page. This is amazing. Again, Chazal say this, but you should read the words and absorb it. As the first commandment issued forth from the mountaintop, most of the Jewish people found the words incomprehensible. The image of the Shekhinah is represented by the flaming vision, and the sounds assume five different forms. Next page. Presently, the next page, 218. The words coalesced and began to take on forms all people could understand. In fact, there were seven forms of the sounds adapted to different kinds. Everyone heard the sounds. Each of the seven sounds was translated into 70 languages. And every single Jewish soul, this is the famous Medrash, the Zohar, the Medrash, past, present, and future, was present on Har Sinai. Every Jew until the end of time would personally be committed to the Torah. And then he describes everyone had this Nebuah of Maimon Har Sinai. And then it says that the Medrash says they saw the sounds. That's what the Medrash says. They saw the sounds. That's what he quotes at page 219. They perceived the words in their sound waves. The words emanated from the Shekhinah in fiery sparks that formed into letters. The letters were high into the sky, that everyone could see them. That's the Medrash. Rashi quotes it. They could see the letters. What? It was like fire in the sky. That, the letters of the Aseret Dibros. That Hashem said. The letters of the first word, Anochi, Aleph, Nun, Chof, Yud, shimmered in fire before the eyes in all directions. People reached out for them, but the letters eluded their grasp. So this is the pshat that B'nai Yisrael could see the sounds. Oh. And then Hashem said, "Do you accept all the mitzvos?" And they said, "Yes." And they went through all the mitzvos, etc. Okay, there's more here. There's a lot more here. But this is Maim et Harsina. Okay? This is Maim et Harsina. That this man of Matan Torah, B'nai Yisrael had a nevuah. The entire Jew had a nevuah. They all saw Hashem to one degree or another, whatever that means. Each one at his own level. So you have to picture the physical world getting ready for Ruchnias, and then we had the Nebuah. And then the people at Har Sinai told their kids, they told their kids, and we have a direct Mesorah of Maimed Har Sinai happening to us, and miracles of 7 million people. And this is our Amunah, and you're supposed to pass this along to your kids and to your grandkids. And you want to give the impression that you're re-experiencing Maimed Har Sinai. And then we do things in our lives that re-experience Maimed Har Sinai. Every time there's laning, you're supposed to feel like it's Maimed Har Sinai. That's why some have a chumrah to stand. The Maharam Rutenberg stood during laning. Maharam Rutenberg. A lot of Ashkenazim picked it up. The reason is, it's like you re-experience Maimed Har Sinai when everyone stood. It's like when the guy's laning, you're hearing Hashem talk. That's the idea. It's a big deal, guys. You're supposed to remember and think about Maimed Har Sinai. Some say it's a mamash mitzvah. And then I want to quote Rav Nevensol. I say yesterday it was a beautiful pshat. Beautiful pshat. And then we'll stop with that. So Lo Sachmod says, don't desire somebody else's house, their money. It's hard. Wait, you're not supposed to want something that somebody else has? So the Ibn Ezra gives a famous pshat that if we had the right attitude to other people's money, we'd view it as being like totally out of bounds. Something that's totally out of bounds, you don't think about, because you know it's like totally beyond you. You don't think about it. Like, you know, I don't think about, you know, doing double reverse. I don't think about doing, you know, three dunks. Oh my gosh, what would it be like to do a 360? I don't think about it because, like, it's just beyond my world. So if you had the right attitude towards money and wealth, then you'd view your friend's house as a different universe. That's the Torah, that's the Ibn Ezra. Rav Nevensol said the following. Let's say somebody asked you during Maimed Har Sinai, do you want your friend's house? So Rav Nevensol said, if somebody asked me during Maimed Har Sinai, do you want my friend's house? Rav Nevensol said, if I'd be able to open my mouth, I'd be trembling, I'd say, my friend's house, I don't want my house. All I want is to hear Hashem talk. If you really had that attitude, I'm hearing Matan Torah now, that's what Gashmis is your life now. You want your friend's house? Your own house you don't want. You don't want your own, even your own house you don't want. That's his Musa. That's not bad. Meaning, we're supposed to think about Maimed Har Sinai all the time, especially on Shavuos. This is what you're supposed to be thinking about. You're learning the whole night. You're davening in the morning. And then when you learn Gemara, and you learn Tanakh, and you learn Mishnah, you're recreating this. Hashem's there. You're supposed to be recreating the Maimed Har Sinai. You got it? It's an amazing sefer, amazing book. It's a very good sefer to go through before Shavuos.